Dermot, you were listening in the Israeli embassy to yesterday's programme, and there's a couple of things that you heard you wanted to take issue with. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Sorry, I can't remember your first
Philip
name.
Philip is my
Philip,
name.
Sorry, Philip, yeah. Well, I was hoping that we could move on to some of to the background behind some of the accusations that were made yesterday. There was a plethora of outrageous allegations, lies, actually, uttered yesterday on your program. The allegation was made that Israel is carrying out genocide and ethnic cleansing in the Gaza Strip, that it's carrying out a siege of the Strip, and that Hamas rocket fire is a legitimate resistance to that siege, that Israeli policy is to remove all the Palestinian people from the Gaza Strip and to replace them with Jews, and in more generally, that Israel is totally responsible for the poverty and deprivation in Gaza, and that it allows no access of persons or humanitarian supplies into the Strip.
Well, now, I didn't hear the last point being made, but we'll go back on the other points, point by point.
Well, it was made in the context of alleging that the siege was total, so that nothing can get in or get out, or words to that effect.
Again, that wasn't exactly or entirely what people said, but the issue of acts of genocide being committed.
Okay, let's deal with that first. The word genocide, you know, if the English language means anything, the word genocide means an attempt to eliminate an entire race or nation of people, or the definition is somewhat broader than that, but that's the essence of it. It means the attempt to eliminate an entire group of people. The facts about the population of the Gaza Strip are that it has increased from the year 2000. It went from 1.2 million to today's number, 1.8 million. So, if Israel is practicing genocide, it's got to be it's got to be particularly incompetent at the job, I have to say.
But the actual definition, as you well know, in the Israeli embassy as to what constitutes an act of genocide, and the point that I was trying to make to these people was that Israel has never been indicted of an act of genocide. They were making the point that they said that it felt to them like it was genocide.
I'm sorry, but the word genocide, you know, it's not based on a feeling. It's based on a definition of a word.
And the actual definition is not as you defined it. The actual definition is systematic and repeated attempts to attack a population. Now, does that not sound like what's happening in Gaza?
No, it doesn't, because there are many wars going on in the world at the moment, and I haven't heard the word genocide being used about very many of them. There are the total fatality list in the entire history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict stands at around 22,000. That number, that's one-seventh of the number of people who have been killed in 3 years of Syrian civil war. So if we're going to use that word, and if we're going to devalue the word genocide to that extent, then we'd better start using it far more widely about many, many more conflicts going on at present in the world.
Is the word siege not used accurately then?
No, it's not, because a siege implies that you are besieging the place, that you are refusing to allow any entry or exit of materials or personnel into the area. The actual history of that particular thing is that Israel abandoned Gaza in 2005. It has no territorial claims over Gaza. It pulled out all of its troops, and it actually pulled out every single Jewish settler in 2005.
And the flow of
some goods of these people had to be dragged out physically,
okay.
And it caused huge controversy within Israeli society. There are no plans to reverse the pulling out of Jewish settlers from.
Let's bring in one or two other voices.
It's a lie to say. No, sorry, may I just continue with these points? I mean, you gave four anti-Israel people 40 minutes of uninterrupted time.
It's a phone-in show. We can only give voice to those people who call in. And I would point out to you that the Israeli ambassador was on air for just as long by himself on the same day.
There were three egregious lies uttered yesterday. I've only managed to deal with two of them.
And the third is?
The genocide lie and the siege lie.
Mm-hmm.
There are the...
What's the third point, the third lie? Is it the that you disagree with the description of firing rockets as a legitimate form of resistance?
That would be it, yes. There was absolutely no reason... The rockets had been fired from 2001. That's 4 years before Israel withdrew. When Israel did withdraw, the rocket fire had been averaging about 10 per week up to then. After the withdrawal, that rocket fire was escalated to treble that number, 30-something per week, by within a year. And then the following year, 2008, it went up to six times that number, over 60 rocket and mortar attacks each
And
week.
Before the recent events of the last couple of weeks, how many had been fired on a weekly basis? As
between
an average?
Between the 12th of June, which is the day that the three Israeli boys were abducted
In the last 18 months, Hamas had all but ceased firing rockets, hadn't they?
That's not quite true. It did cease firing rockets for the first 3 months of 2013, which was the immediate aftermath of Israel's last operation. But they said, almost as soon as that operation finished, Hamas began constructing huge numbers of new tunnels under Gaza. They were misusing the cement supplies which Israel had been pressurized by the rest of the world to allow into Gaza for specific construction projects. They were misusing this to build new tunnels, and these tunnels are the main military objective of the Israeli army now, the destruction of these tunnels. U.S. intelligence is now saying that there may be up to 60 of these tunnels. The Israeli army so far has dealt with about 13 of them. So we can see that there's quite a long way to go.
Okay. Let's deal with some of these points from some of the other perspectives. Colm, you are a civil servant all your life, so you're well used to the careful use of language, but you've also been to Gaza. Would you agree with or take issue with those descriptions of genocide, siege and resistance?
I would certainly agree with the word siege. And I think an important word we need to put in here as well is that Gaza is a de facto ghetto. The people in Gaza, we must remember that they're original people from Gaza, that about two-thirds of the people of Gaza are refugees from Sderot and nearby towns Ashkelon, which have been taken over and the native population expelled in 1948 and forced to move to their nearest point of safety, which was Gaza at the time, and they've been there since, living in refugee camps. It has a fence around it. The airport is blown up in Israel. The seaport isn't allowed to be used. No exports are allowed out of Gaza, which could pose absolutely no threat to Israel. So I think
explain to people when you go to Gaza how difficult it is to get in and out. What happens at the border exchanges, and whether there is or isn't a free flow of goods.
My own experience here. I'm from Connemara, County Galway, and a crowd of us. Myself, my wife turned our house into a restaurant one night. Thankfully, I'm married to a very good cook. She cooked a lovely Middle Eastern meal, and we raised money to bring medical aid to a hospital in Gaza. The man in the Israeli embassy claims that the closure isn't complete. I would agree with that. Dribbles of aid are allowed in, and the Israelis actually calculated how much food is required to keep a person alive at subsistence level some years ago, and this level of food was allowed into Gaza. So it is a siege on what is a de facto ghetto. When I went in there, I went in through with €20,000 worth of aid collected by ordinary people here in Galway, and we bought medical goods, and we were days and days waiting on the Egyptian side. It should not be forgotten that the Egyptians are equally compliant in the imposition of the siege on Gaza, as well as the Israeli government. So we had days and days waiting at Rafah, and then finally we were allowed into Gaza. What I saw in Gaza was quite shocking to me.
We'll just deal with these things point by point. We'll bring Dermot back in there. Dermot, you know, what Colm is describing there isn't a siege in the medieval use of the words. It is certainly a selective blockade that leads to, or the result of which, is anything but the free flow of goods, people and services.
That's exactly right. It is a selective blockade, and what's being blockaded are materials that can be used for military purposes and parts of weaponry. Those long-range rockets that are now being rained on Tel Aviv, and one of which landed near the airport yesterday in Israel, these are M302s, which are supplied by Iran. They're made in Syria, supplied by Iran. A ship carrying a consignment of them was impounded by the Israeli Navy last March.
Okay, but the other point that Colin made there is that the diet of most people in Gaza ends up being subsistence. It is not nutritionally varied, it is just about calorifically adequate.
Yesterday alone, 57 trucks went into Gaza from Israel, carrying 1,278 tons of food. Not just food, but agricultural materials and other essential items.
To 1.8 million people.
That's a daily. That's a daily amount. If you want the figure from the beginning of July, it was 778 trucks. Now that is, if anyone can tell me what other country which has had war declared against it, because that is what Israel, that's the position Israel is in. Hamas has declared war against it. If you know any other country which has had war declared against it, which supplies anything at all to the civilian population of its enemy.
I think it's very important to note here that it's Israel's international obligation to see that it's a country it has invaded, or which was then occupied by Egypt before it was occupied by Israel. They still have responsibility under international law as the occupying power to ensure that the civilian population is fed, has power, and is supposed to provide safety for the people rather than being bombing them as they're doing now.
And if Hamas, after 2005, had not escalated its rocket fire, given that there was now no occupation of the land of Gaza, the reason for the control of air and land space and sea is precisely the result of the war which Hamas continued to wage after the Israeli withdrawal in 2005.
Why can you tell me, please, Dermot, why you don't allow any ships to sail from Gaza, posing no threat to Israel whatsoever?
I mentioned a ship earlier
leaving Gaza, I'm saying.
All ships have to be monitored coming in and out of Gaza for
nothing is allowed out
for
of
weaponry.
Gaza,
it's a naval blockade, and it's quite legitimate under international law.
Yeah, what's your justification,
okay,
though, for
can I try and move the conversation? Colin, I want to interrupt you for 1 second.
Sure,
bring in a few other voices and move the conversation on a little bit. Fran is on the line, and Greg. No, stay with us, though, Colin, because what I am interested to hear is, Colin, you could answer this question first, and then Fran. Do you believe, regardless of what is being rained down by Israel on Gaza, that anybody from the Hamas side or any of the other Palestinian resistance groups are justified in the taking of a single Israeli life by the launching of rockets?
Well, I would put it like this. Gaza is a de facto ghetto created by the State of Israel for non-Jewish people to live in. If I was in the Warsaw ghetto in 1944 and I had access to rockets, I'm sure I would have used them. And I think it's important to point out that Hamas is a very broad organization. It was a bit like Sinn Féin here in the 1990s, where it had an armed wing, but it's the elected government of Palestine. They're the majority party in the political system there. Mm-hmm.
But some would say, Colm, that it's an armed movement that grew a social wing in order to become more popular.
You could say that, but they are where they are now, and they are the elected biggest party in Palestine.
Okay, Fran, Dermot, because I am going to let you, I really do want to get you back in on this, Dermot, but let me bring in some other voices and see if there's any degree of consensus here. Fran, do you believe that Hamas is justified in launching rockets that would end up taking even a single Israeli life?
No, I don't. I don't agree with either of them killing people on either side, no more than I agreed with it in Northern Ireland. I don't agree with it. So let's get that out of the way. Secondly, can I just say, I hate when these kind of discussions become like cowboys and Indians. You know what I mean? The good guys and the bad guys. There are good guys and bad guys on every side, and that's the truth. But can I just say something about the genocide issue? If you look at the map of Palestine in 1917, which I have in front of me actually as I speak, and you look at it then and you look at it now, you will see that on the one hand, the whole map of Palestine is virtually gone. It has become Israel. you have this tiny strip by the sea, which is called Gaza, and you have the West Bank, which someone described to me, and which it should be described as now Swiss cheese, because you can't, in the West Bank, which we're not talking about, I know, but the West Bank is like populated by small, like villages and towns, which are all kind of, they're breaking them away from each other, breaking them up. It's not like a landmass that you could say, this is all the West Bank. It's all broken up. I've been to Israel several times. I've been to Gaza once. I was in Gaza in the late 1990s. And I was really sad. I mean, I went out there very, very much pro-Israeli. Who cannot be pro-Israeli when the Holocaust happened? You know, you'd have to be, as a Westerner anyway, there'd have to be something wrong with you. And I went out there totally, totally pro-Israeli. And I have to admit that I came back disheartened and concerned and much more pro-Palestinian. And just one final point, just this week alone, a friend of mine who's an Israeli who would be of the liberal view, who would not agree with what's happening at the moment, not at all. She and her son, she just had to get out of Tel Aviv. She just can't take it. So she's actually just escaped from the rockets. So no, I don't agree with the rockets. No, I don't agree with killing. But you have to look at the map of Palestine in 1917, look at it again in 1948, and look at it now, and ask yourself, is this not a systematic attempt to get rid of these people? Mairead Carrigan Maguire, just this week, in fact, there was a rally in Belfast. She was a Nobel Peace Laureate, and if ever there was a woman of peace, I can tell you she's one of them. And she said, until Israel is genuinely, genuinely wanting to have peace, not just get rid of the Palestinians, genuinely want peace with the Palestinians, there'll never be peace. The Palestinians want peace. They are beaten. I've been out there. Mm-hmm. I was out there in 2007. They're beaten.
Let's bring in some other voices. Let's bring in some other voices, Fran, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Greg, do you believe that firing of rockets is a legitimate act of resistance?
No, I don't think taking of life is a legitimate act of anybody. You know, whether it's military action, whether it's death penalty, I don't believe in any type of killing. However, the reality on the ground, as Colin mentioned, is if you were in that situation, could you honestly say you sit in your hands and just sit back and take what's meted out to you? And that's just the reality of the way things are and the way people are. If you create a system of mass injustice and mass oppression, people will react. And
They will react, Greg, and we're just about hearing you, Greg. So what we might do is ring you back and see if we can't improve the quality of that line. Dermot,
could I bring this discussion back to a very important aspect of reality that is being completely ignored here? I'd like to read a few phrases from the Charter of Hamas. From the preface, first of all, the preface says, Israel will rise and will remain erect until Islam eliminates it as it had eliminated its predecessors. From Article 7, it says that we've been looking forward to implement Allah's promise, whatever time it might take. The Prophet said, the hour of judgment will not come until Muslims will fight the Jews and kill them, until the Jews hide behind rocks and trees, which will cry, oh Muslim, there is a Jew hiding behind me, come on and kill him.
Okay. Dermot, you have heard from everybody who has been speaking here that...
I'm trying to illustrate something here.
Well, hang on. No, just let me make this point
motivation
to you, because this is
very important here.
No, hang on. Just 1 second. We still have plenty of time left in the programme. The point that everybody is communicating, I hope they don't mind me summarising them like this, is that while they don't see that the firing of rockets is necessarily justifiable, they do see that Israel has created the circumstances. They think that Israel is responsible for the circumstances that has created the need for armed resistance.
But can anybody tell me where the justification for rocket fire remained after 2005, when Israel took its troops and all the Jewish settlers out of the area?
I'm still mystified
as to why people would.
I can reply to that, Dermot.
That there was still a justification.
Yeah. Go on, Colm.
You're going to
people,
talk about an
people,
air.
If you're okay. The Israeli policy is for them to sit quiet in their ghetto and make noise and accept their lot. They're looking across the fence at their original farms, their original homes, in what is now said they're not. They can see their ancestral homes which their grandfathers remember. Yeah. What are they supposed to do? Just sit there forever quietly?
No.
Let people in Tel Aviv enjoy the beaches.
Let me add, when Israel withdrew, it was making a goodwill gesture. If you like, it was making a down payment on a future Palestinian state. It was a trial to see if Gaza could become the nuclear.
Very nice of you.
Excuse me. I'm trying to make a point here.
Okay.
That the abandonment of Gaza was a goodwill gesture. It came as a trial. Let's not forget that as well as abandoning all the Jewish...
Excuse me.
As well as abandoning all the Jewish settlements in Gaza, four settlements in the West Bank were also taken out. And as well as that...
And how many have been built since?
Sorry, I haven't finished my point. Glass houses, which were valued at a total of $14 million, were contributed. This was an effort which was made by Israel to kickstart an independent Gazan economy. Within 1 week of Israel's full withdrawal, every one of those glass houses was smashed. This is what a radical Islamist regime does. This is how it respects the lives and the welfare of its own population.
Is that not what young people with no hope, no prospects and no jobs to go to end up doing as well?
That is the exact reverse of the truth. In August 2005, there was hope. If you want to talk about a pre-existing Israeli occupation, that occupation came to an end in 2005. Surely that would have brought hope.
It didn't come to
an end. We know that because of continuing. I am out of time there, gentlemen. I'm going to have to leave Dermot with the last word on that
and take a break. Thank you very much, Dermot, Colm, Fran and Greg. I really am genuinely sorry about ending the conversation like that, but I am out of time, over time, late for Derek Mooney, who is up next. Today's programme was produced by Emma Laffin. Thank you all very much for listening. Back again tomorrow.